Don't go in the closet.
Why not? What's in the closet?
Same thing that was under the bed, and she's not happy. Hey everybody, I'm Bob Smithauser. Welcome to the official Plugged In podcast. Number one at the box office last weekend was the creepy PG-13 ghost story, Mama. Audiences like it, critics seem to like it, we'll let you know if we like it, and tell you what this horror movie has in common with the warm, fuzzy family film, The Odd Life of Timothy Green. Seated beside me is the man who reviewed Mama for the weekly Plugged In Movie Review radio feature, Bob Olszewski. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
We're also going to hear from actor Kevin Sorbo, check in with listener mail, and even learn which movies help us burn the most calories. So stay with us. Today's podcast is sponsored by the Focus Leadership Institute, now offering advanced Christian worldview studies online. That's right. Now you can earn a leadership certificate from home at your own pace. For more information, visit focusleadership.org/ALO.
And now, here's a little something we like to call Culture Clips.
Bob, before you share your news story, there's a movie opening this weekend, an R-rated comedy bragging about how raunchy and offensive it is, that has a marketing hook that I thought speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can mention this to our listeners. It's called Movie 43. Lots of big names attached. Anyway, here's how it advertises itself. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And I thought, man, that could not only serve as a warning for Movie 43, but for entertainment in general, couldn't it?
You know, I recall a letter, and you probably will too, Bob, from a young man who said that mainstream television and movies were tantamount to porn in his life. He could not unsee what he'd already seen. And I think of a friend of mine whose 12-year-old daughter saw a horror film at a slumber party, and she needed a boatload of counseling after that. Once again, a little girl who could not unsee what she'd already seen.
Yeah. So what news bite caught your eye this week? And I think it has to do with horror movies, doesn't it?
It does. Although this was a strange one. There is a study out of England, Great Britain's University of Westminster, that suggests that watching horror films, especially ones with adrenaline goose-bumping scares, can burn more than 100 calories. Researchers monitored the pulse, the heart rate, oxygen intake, and CO2 output of subjects. It was just a small subject study, by the way, it's only 10 people. But what they found is that they were burning, again, over 100 calories, Shining, 184, Jaws, 161, Exorcist, 158. So again, the moral of the story is watch a horror film, burn some calories. But I would argue, what about a nice walk, a jog, a swim, a bicycle ride, something like that? Because, as we just said, you can't unsee it once you've already seen it.
You know, it's interesting how this study, as well as the media outlets reporting it, made a big deal about the measurable physiological results and ignored the heart issues.
Oh, yeah. What about spiritual? What about the emotional? What about, as I said, this 12-year-old girl that had a boatload of counseling? I remember this mom calling me and said, Bob, what do I do? And I couldn't just say, hey, be happy, because she probably burnt 100 calories the other night at her slumber party. You know,
that's a good point. Still, it does make me wonder how many calories I burned at the theater this week watching Mama.
No kidding.
Come here.
Mama.
No, don't call me that. I'm not your mom. I'm Annabelle. You can call me that. Or Annie, or whatever you'd like.
That's Jessica Chastain in a haunting new thriller about two orphaned sisters kept alive in the woods by a supernatural caregiver who doesn't want to give up custody once the girls are found. Bob, tell us more about Mama.
Well, in that clip, we heard the name Annabelle. And Annabelle and Lucas are a couple, not a married couple, but they're a couple. And they accept the responsibility, as you've already alluded to, of taking care of his two young nieces after the death of the girl's parents. And not immediately after, but 5 years after. Somehow, Lucas's nieces, Victoria and Lily, have survived in a wilderness cabin for half a decade. And no one knows exactly how, but everyone realizes it's a bizarre situation, to say the least. But the girls seem to believe that some mysterious guardian that they call Mama has been the one responsible for keeping them alive.
Guillermo del Toro, who is the creator of the Oscar-nominated Pan's Labyrinth, we remember that one.
Yeah.
He produced this film, and he did it on the strength of a 2.5-minute short called Mama that's actually scarier than some feature films. Let's talk about content for a minute, because even though this film's rated PG-13, it's effective enough to have grown-ups sleeping with a light on.
You know, it definitely is. And one of the things about this film is that the director seems to relish every bump, every loud scare. And even though the body count isn't high, I would say every death. But there's another part about this film that bothered me a lot. From a Christian worldview perspective, it just didn't add up. The idea that there's some type of a ghostly figure that if you just didn't quite complete a task on earth while you lived, you needed to stick around to complete that task. I suppose that's a little bit of a spoiler, but not really. It doesn't line up with a Christian worldview. And I want to see something else. I also thought the film, despite the critics giving it some pretty high praise, I read Roger Moore said something like, the best ghost story since Insidious. But I felt it was pretty cheesy. Honestly, I just thought, I was at the very end, I thought, you're kidding me. This is all there is. I waited through this film to end. It had to end this way. And so it did, even from an entertainment perspective, it lost me.
You know, I liked it a little bit better than you did. And I think we probably had the same problems with some of the content, some language. I mean, there were a few misuses of Jesus's name, which really bugged me. I think that was my biggest problem with it, believe it or not. The moments of violence are intense, but they're bloodless. They're usually pretty restrained or implied.
Not gory.
And even the ghost issue, I'll be real honest, and I may upset some people by saying this, but theologically, I have more trouble with Aragorn commissioning an army of the dead in Lord of the Rings the way he did than the way the ghost is handled here. People are not, you know, they're not trying to contact the other side. They're just kind of coping with the fact that the other side has invaded their space. So I don't disagree with what you said, but I want to give it a little bit of credit for the things it does well. And one of those things is that it is crafted for maximum chills, but without relying on some of that, I don't know, the gratuitous content.
The saw, gore. We're going to just scare you by giving you blood spray.
Yeah, it's not a body count movie. We often complain about horror movies feeling gratuitous, and this one really isn't, and I think we probably ought to give it a little bit of credit for that. But in spite of the problems, I was pleasantly surprised by some of the themes. How about you?
I could not believe how much I liked Annabelle and Lucas when they finally came around to accepting the responsibility of being caretakers.
Yeah.
Now, I say finally come around. Really, that's Annabelle, because Lucas, right off the bat, he wants to be the caretaker of his two young nieces, and he steps into that fatherly role very well. And he shows not only a genuine sense of caring, but also a physical affection. Annabelle, a little bit slower to come around, but when she comes around, she comes around fully.
Yeah.
And she puts all the cards on the table, and she is ready to be a mom. We heard that clip where she says, don't call me mom. But eventually, I would almost say she could probably say, I guess, girls, you could call me mom. We don't have that dialogue, but it's that kind of a 180 that takes place.
Yeah,
and that was refreshing.
It was the most impressive maternal metamorphosis I've seen in a movie in a long time. I mean, when we meet her, we didn't mention this, she's a punk rocker with a live-in boyfriend rejoicing over a negative pregnancy test. I mean, she's really a pretty bohemian existence to that point. No interest at all in being committed, much less being a mom. And so when Luke adopts these girls, I mean, she tries the domestic thing more for his sake, I guess, than for anything else. But, you know, over time, she and the girls develop a sweet relationship, especially after all this lands completely on her shoulders. And I won't go into any more detail than that. But there's a dimension of her femininity that awakens. And by the end of the story, she is defiantly risking her own life for these kids. And I love that about this movie.
I did too. Now, I will say that it's still not reason. We're almost end on too much of a positive where people say, well, maybe this is really worth buying a ticket. I would say it this way. Read the longer review on this one, probably more than any movie we've talked about in a while on this podcast, because to get your comfort level. There will be some people take away that read it and say, yep, okay, I'm going to go. I think there's going to be a lot more they're going to go say, I don't think it's worth the ride.
Right. I agree with you. And, you know, the key here, and I alluded at the top of the program to the similarities between this film and Odd Life of Timothy Green, which may be a real jarring comparison for some folks. I mean, they are very different films, mm-hmm. totally different genres, but Mama is about something we care about very deeply at Focus on the Family. It's about a woman's needs, her fears, and at times the unfulfilled longing that comes with the desire to nurture children. And, you know, with Odd Life of Timothy Green, that was very much the same
theme. An infertile couple that want to have a child.
Yeah. And it's funny, I even was thinking about 1 Kings chapter 3, the second half of that chapter, where Solomon deals with the mother whose baby died and she tries to steal another woman's baby. Yeah. Something about the jealousy even of this thing. So there's a lot to unpack for adults who may be predisposed to this genre, but we certainly wouldn't call this a family film.
Absolutely not.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Well, moving right along, a movie I'm pretty sure everybody can agree on. It's the faith-based drama Abel's Field. It arrived straight to DVD Tuesday, and it's about a teenage boy named Seth struggling to raise his two sisters in a small Texas town. See, Seth makes friends with a groundskeeper at his high school, who's a brooding man with troubles of his own, played by Kevin Sorbo. The film's about these men and their various relationships, God included. Now, you may recall that a little over a year ago, we interviewed Kevin on the set of Abel's Field, and the other day we reconnected by phone to get his thoughts on that Christian film and others he's been working on. Well, the reason we're talking is because Abel's Field arrived on DVD earlier this week. Strong film. I'm sure you're proud of it.
Well, I'm always a note guy, you know. I'm always the perfectionist of it with everything, and I go, you know, why don't we took out that whole scene? What happened to that scene? What happened to this? Hey, wasn't that one line? Shouldn't that be back over here again? You know, but I really enjoyed it. We had a great group of people. I mean, we aired it at the Paramount lot, and it was a full house, a lot of industry people there, and it was a really good experience. It was a lot of fun to bring in some family members and all, and you know, it was neat. It's always good to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, it's got a great heart, and I thought your young co-star Samuel Davis was just terrific.
You know, for a guy who hasn't done a lot of stuff, he's got great confidence, and he came through with shining colors, and he and I sat down a lot and worked on a lot of different scenes together, and you know, he's got a very big maturity for a kid, a young college kid, and it showed. It sort of revolves around his character, and you know, his character, my character, are both pretty much sort of lost souls, and even though I'm supposed to be in the sort of mentoring role, he ends up being just as much a mentor to me as I am to him.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your character and what kind of a challenge it may have been playing a character who is carrying such a heavy burden throughout the film.
You know, it was, I loved the script, like I said, from the start. When they brought it to me and we discussed it, and I was brought on board as one of the producers of it to try to help raise money, and you know, with my connections I've got, and with their connections I've got, everything, you know, thank God it finally worked out. But I like this guy. I like the journey he's going on. I like the burden that he's got to carry with him. The search for forgiveness, the search for, you know, just for peace. He's a very distraught man, but he has learned to calm basically his inner, you know, hatred and emotions through the life that he's decided to live. And what happens, obviously, at the end of the movie, he really comes to terms with what he needs to do and take care of in his life, because that's the one step, final step, that he's always been afraid to take. And you know, Seth's character, Seth, helps show him the road that he really should have been walking on, because he's been really just rambling and ambling through all the highways of the country for the last 30 years of his life.
Yeah. What personal experiences can you tell us about that maybe help you identify with those themes, or maybe even help you develop your character?
Well, certainly what I went through in myself between seasons 5 and 6 on my series Hercules, I was about to start another movie for Universal, and I was living in New Zealand for the whole 7-year run of that show. At the end of season 5, I was coming back to America to do a movie, but I kept having problems with my left shoulder, and I couldn't figure out what was going on with it. So I went to my doctor, and they found a lump in my shoulder. But before they had a chance to do a biopsy, that lump ended up being an aneurysm that totally opened up, sent hundreds of clots into my left arm, and unfortunately 3 of the clots went into my brain. I suffered 3 strokes.
Mm.
So I have a book out right now actually called True Strength. People can go to truestrengthbook.com to see a video and get information on it, to get it on Amazon. And It really is. You know, I could relate to what my character's going through, and what, you know, the real life Kevin Sorbo, what he's going through, just having to push past not only the limitations, but push past the boundaries that we place on ourselves, and try to find, you know, I mean, I had to go through all those steps of, like, you know, blaming God when it wasn't God's fault. I knew that. It's sort of human nature. We blame everybody else for our failures in our life or for the bad things that happen to us. In reality, all we got to do is look in the mirror and find out who the culprit truly is. So the parallels were pretty much there for me, just with what happened to the illness I had and the recovery I had to go through.
Yeah. Well, since finishing Abel's Field, you say you've been really busy, more than a half dozen projects due this year that are currently in some phase of production. Anything Christian parents or faith audiences might want to know about and look forward to?
Yeah, I've got the two movies I've got set up this year, both faith-based. One's called Persecuted. I play a Billy Graham type of character. It's an action faith-based movie, and my character is known around the world, and the government, pretty much what our government's trying to do right now is take over all power from everybody and limit all of us with freedom of speech. In this case, they want to, and the movie deals with religious speech, and there's a certain senator who wants to make all religious speech obsolete, so we don't offend people. And, of course, my character is freedom of religion. You know, let people do what they want to do in terms of the religions they want to pursue. And they set me up for the murder of an 18-year-old girl. So I become a fugitive on the run to prove my innocence. And the other one is called Trial by Fire. And, well, that one is called Persecuted. And the other one is Trial by Fire, which is sort of a Karate Kid faith-based type of movie. And I just finished one called God's Not Dead, where I played an atheist college professor who gets challenged by one of his students to prove the existence of God in my philosophy course. And that's going to come out in theaters in the fall of this year. And it was a wonderful movie. We just wrapped up shooting just before Christmas time in Louisiana.
I wanted to thank you, because last thing I think you said to me before we kind of parted ways in Texas was you asked me whether I had seen What If yet. I guess it was relatively new at the time. And I had not, but checked it out. I just got a big thumbs up from my producer, Dave. He's seen it. He loved it, too.
Awesome.
And I really did enjoy that film. And, you know, going into it, there's that familiar Capra-esque premise. And I think your film really gives the audience credit for having seen those types of movies before. And very smartly, it went in some unpredictable directions. Worked really well for me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope your listeners, if they haven't seen it, check out What If, then go to the whatifmovie.com. It was a John Ratzenberger plays an angel that comes down from heavens to show how much I've screwed up my life, basically. It's a reverse It's a Wonderful Life. So you write about the Frank Capra touch, and Christy Swanson, the original Buffy the Vampire, plays my wife. And, of course, every kid under 15 knows who Debbie Ryan is from the Disney Channel. And, you know, it's got great warmth. It's got great humor. It's got a great story. I love that script from the first time I read it. And I'm usually the type of guy that asks for changes in scripts, and I didn't change one word in that script. I thought it was just great from top to bottom.
Yeah, before I let you go, we are talking to a lot of moms and dads today, Kevin. As a father of three children, now I think 7, 8, and 11, is that right?
7, 8, 11, very good.
What are some of the challenges you guys are dealing with right now? I know that you and your wife homeschool.
Yep.
Any words of encouragement for other parents navigating some waters that you're going through?
You know, I think everybody can write the same book on being a parent. It's just a matter of, certainly there's patience, but, you know, yes, it's great to be their best friend, but you also have to be their parent. You have to be their boss. You have to be the person that is in control, and you have to learn to say no. No is just as much a positive word as yes is. Children need to understand there are, you know, what's right and wrong, and I think that pretty much inherently we all kind of know what's right and wrong. But, you know, guidelines have to be set, and you just have to be, you know, you just have to not be afraid to let your children know what they're doing is wrong, if they're doing something wrong, and praise them when they're doing things right.
Well, congratulations on Abel's Field, and blessings to you and your family in 2013, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking about the other movies I got coming up.
If you'd like to go back and watch our first interview from the set of Abel's Field, that's right, I said watch, go to the main podcast page at PluggedIn.com and scroll down just a bit. In the middle, you'll see the bonus video link for episode number 115. Speaking of Abel's Field, we have a copy of the DVD to give away, which can only mean one thing.
Stand by. Mail loading.
Indeed, it's time to hear from you. Today's email is from Kaylee Guthrie of Cibolo, Texas. Kaylee had some encouraging thoughts she wanted to share with us, so Bob, would you do the honors?
You bet. I never heard of Cibolo, Texas, but Kaylee, I've read your letter several times, and my goodness, it's a favorite. Here's what she says. Thanks so much for everything you do. I'm 14 years old, and I've read your website and its reviews for nearly 4 years. Bob, that means you started at 10. I check the website almost every day, and I listen to your podcast. As a result, I have become the unofficial media specialist in my family. When my mom stops by a Redbox kiosk while running errands, she calls me and asks, what did Plugged In have to say about this one?
That's great to hear.
She goes on to say, I'm a budding screenwriter and director, so your reviews have helped me to understand what makes a film family friendly. When working on an idea for a script, I am always asking myself, what would Plugged In say about this? You have helped our family save money and time. Your reviews have also taught me how to have discernment, not only with what I watch, but also the video games I play, the books that I read, and the music that I listen to. Thanks again for all you do.
Wow.
And I have to say, Kaylee, I love this letter. Like I said, I've read it several times. But I think the thing I like the most about it is that she has been learning discernment. In other words, she's not just coming to the reviews to get a yes or no, not that we kind of give a thumbs up or thumbs down anyways, but she's wrestling with the issue of discernment. And she says it's translated even to her book reading, her video game playing, and her music listening too. So Kaylee, I'm proud of you. I am a fan of you, just like you're a fan of us.
And we always love to know how we're making a difference. So thank you, Kaylee. And keep an eye on your mailbox. As we mentioned earlier, because we shared your email, we're going to send you a copy of Abel's Field, starring Kevin Sorbo and newcomer Samuel Davis. You know, a lesson both main characters in that film learn is that choices, the ones we make or the choices of others, can keep our path from being straight and smooth. And yet, if we're willing to let God and his people come alongside of us on that journey, it can really make a big difference. As it happens, that's also the theme of today's music clip. It's from Christian recording artist Tyrus Morgan. In just a minute, we're going to preview the title song from his latest CD, Straight Line. But first, Bob, thanks for being here.
Like always, it's a privilege.
Thanks also to our engineer, Dave Salkeld, our special guest, Kevin Sorbo, and our sponsor, the Focus Leadership Institute. And maybe it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Thank you for making us part of your busy day. As always, have a great week. And remember, it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.
Pretty girl with diamonds in your eyes, you find you're in a place you barely recognize. Everything you knew and all your hopes and dreams are falling all around you, just like autumn leaves. You say something's just